For Phil Collins Day 2012, it's Video Games Hot Dog. I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
Hey, and it's Video Games Hot Dog again. How you guys been?
Yeah.
Has it only been a week?
Yes.
Yeah. It's going to be more than a week.
Yes.
Because there's no episode next week.
Correct.
All right. What are you guys going to do next
week? Are we just going to skip episode 41, or are we going to do it delayed?
No, I think we should do it delayed. I think that would confuse people. They would feel like were missing something from their feed.
I know. Wouldn't that be weird? We could scatter bits of it around the internet, and then people could reconstruct it, and it could be like the lost episode.
I could hide pieces of it on flash drives on various Caribbean islands.
That would be freaking awesome.
I mean, it'd be awesome for like one dude who solved the puzzle and found all the.
But
episode.
I mean, I'm sure they would probably
he would just put it on BitTorrent.
Publish it, yeah.
What have you guys been up to?
Did you see that? I was still riffing on the thing. I don't know. There was a video from Nine Inch Nails that on their on the website for Nine Inch Nails when you go to buy.
Oh yeah,
things,
if you went to buy that one thing, you just linked
to the Pirate Bay. Yeah, I was like, sweet, go Trent Reznor. Yeah.
Who do you think would win in a fight between Trent Reznor and those rhinoceroses on the giant wooden wheel from Super Mario World? Reznor. Why were those things named Reznor?
Who would win between Flea and Slash and the other one, the actual musicians, and the sub-bosses in Chrono Trigger?
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember those sub-bosses very much. Who do you think would win between Ridley from Metroid and Ripley from Alien Resurrection?
Or Ridley Scott.
You guys done anything exciting in your non-video game lives?
I had a Valentine's Day with my lady friend.
Yeah. You made bread. You did. There was like some fucking Harvest Moon shit.
I cooked for 5 hours for Valentine's dinner. Yeah.
How long did you eat for?
I don't know, 20 minutes.
You see, not worth it. Not worth it.
Inefficient.
I don't know. There was some tasty food.
Yeah, I ate some of it. I pretended that I made it for my girlfriend later.
Not good for you.
No, I totally didn't.
I spent the weekend in a fancy hotel in San Diego.
Oh, yeah?
Yep, we went to the zoo.
Yeah? Did you make it to the Maritime Museum?
No, we ran out of time because of just wandering around the gas lamp district.
Okay.
But so we figured we'll save the Maritime for next time.
You didn't go to the aircraft carrier either?
No.
That aircraft carrier was pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
You went once. Mm-hmm. I went twice, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'd recommend going twice.
Yeah, I enjoyed it the first time, but I don't think a second time would be cool.
The audio tour makes poop jokes if you listen to a little kid version.
That's true. audio tour is worth doing, because otherwise it's just a bunch of empty rooms.
Yeah.
And some plaques.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool. I wish that you could just wander around and that there were like puzzles to solve and that you could find keys to the locked hatches
go
out and go, yeah, that'd be pretty sweet. Like being able to organize a giant scavenger hunt on an aircraft carrier.
Oh my God, that'd be so cool.
And then the winner gets to steer it out to sea.
and created their own country.
Yeah. No, just ram larger ships.
that also have puzzle hunts on them.
You can find one. Yeah, you can just start going. You start shooting down cruise ships.
Maybe you start on a dinghy. Maybe there's a rowboat that has a puzzle on it.
Okay.
And then you have to like crash it into a larger boat that has two puzzles on it. You solve those, which let you crash that into an even larger boat that has three puzzles on it.
All right, like a schooner.
Yeah.
And then the clipper ship has four.
Yeah.
And what's next?
I'm not a maritime aficionado.
The submarine would be the bonus hidden level.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Eventually, there would be an airboat.
Huh.
Yeah. What else did you do in San Diego? Did you play any video games in San Diego?
No, not really. We pretty much just
there are no arcades in the Gaslamp District.
Went to a fancy Indian restaurant. Got dressed up. Had a romantic dinner.
Dressed up like Indians?
No. I was wearing
cowboys.
Did you go to the Dot Indian restaurant dressed as a feather Indian just for irony's
sake? Oh, that would
be
so embarrassing.
Demand pemmican. I'd like a pemmican curry.
Did you go to Cowboy Star dressed up like Indian Moon or Sailor Moon?
I don't want Rip to dress like Sailor Moon.
No.
Oh, come on.
No. There might be some male. Are there any wizards in Sailor Moon?
I don't
know.
There's
like one of those.
Tuxedo Mask.
Yeah, I was going to say. There's the consort or whatever.
Yeah. Wow, do you guys actually know something about Sailor Moon?
It used to be on before Dragon Ball Z, which was on right when I got home from work. So if I got home,
I only know early, it in the context of Halloween costumes.
Oh, okay.
Because girls who want to dress as Sailor Moon have to go with their like tuxedo guide dates.
Oh, did you do that?
I've never done it.
Okay,
I've just heard stories.
You've seen a lot of cosplay in your
life. I have.
I like the Bill cosplay where you just wear a sweater.
Yeah,
pudding pop.
You go around listening chocolate to cake. Kids saying the darndest things.
What have you been up to for the past week?
Nothing.
Oh, come
Wait,
on.
What did I do?
Showering.
What, do you know of something that I did that I'm forgetting about? Yeah, I've taken like 5 showers in the last 2 days because
you've gotten all steamed up.
My shower redone, and I finally, for the first time in 3 months, have been able to use the shower in my
house. 4 weeks, maybe?
No,
3 weeks.
We weren't using it for months prior to that because it became unsafe to
I don't
use the
think
shower.
It's been that
Turns
long.
Out it totally wasn't unsafe to use the shower.
I don't think it's been that long.
So you've just been washing in the sink?
No, I've been pooping in the sink and washing in the toilet. I mean, I didn't want to poop where... So don't poop where you eat is the one rule. But another rule is don't poop in the water you use to wash your mouth.
Oh, yeah, that's
so
a good rule.
So since the toilet was my only bath option, I've been pooping in the sink. And yeah. So I've been taking a bunch of showers in the last couple of days.
Cool.
That's, yeah, I'm, you know, I still not using any soap, so not particularly clean even, just wet. Just
your
wet.
Refusal to dry off is strange.
Yeah, well, I mean, you put some clothes on and that soaks up some of it.
Yeah, but eventually the clothes get wet.
Yeah.
Because all of your clothes are just sitting in a pile on the floor
in
a big wet mess.
We do live in
mess.
The desert, so all you have to do is stand around for
a
minute. Yeah,
I roll around in the sand, and that dries me off. And then I scrape the sand off with seashells. I clean myself the way crazy Romans did.
You've been washing off the eggs from your chickens.
Yes.
And then putting them into the little egg cartons wet, haven't you?
Yes.
Okay, so that water has been sliding down the sides of the eggs and collecting at the bottom, which is not going anywhere, and the bottom of the eggs is getting like just sitting in water for days or weeks at a time.
Okay.
So I think that's a bad plan.
Why do you think that's a bad plan?
Because I think it will eventually just degrade the
I think one of the things about eggs is that they are nature's watertight.
I think that it like sitting an egg partially in water is going to make that part of the egg weaker.
So your suggestion is that having an egg exposed to a small amount of room temperature water will eventually boil part of it.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Well, we do live in a desert.
I can't think of a single interesting thing that I've done apart from taking showers.
Yeah.
And even that wasn't very interesting. I converted my jawbone jam box into a jaw bag jam sack by putting it in a Ziploc bag so that I can listen to it in the shower.
Tucker bag. Tam sack.
Yes. I also made I made a Valentine's Day dinner that couldn't be beat. It could. Every time I cook a steak, I overcook a steak. So I got all these steaks from my grandpa's cow, and
have you been raising the steaks?
I have. So I went to cook them, and I'm like, all right, last time I cooked this steak for 9 minutes and it was a little bit overdone. So these steaks I cooked for 7 minutes and they were even more overdone.
On the grill?
Yep.
Huh.
Inconsistent heating.
Yeah.
The grill was wet because it was raining.
Hmm.
The grill was almost entirely shrouded in overgrown bougainvillea. Maybe that had something to do with it.
Interesting. And maybe it's extra fuel.
Sure. I don't know. Other than that, I've just been playing a bunch of video games. Have you guys been playing any video games?
Yeah. I have a correction to state or retraction or I don't know how you do this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You sort of got... like pwned by
I don't know that I was pwned because my problem was very real. It was just I misattributed the problem.
We'd like to formally apologize. Video Games Hot Dog would like to formally apologize to Simutronics.
Yeah, so last week I reported that
who would have known we had fans at that company.
I had upgraded my Tiny Heroes because like ooh, new level pack, right and I went to like go play the new level pack.
Right.
And got there and almost all of the level packs had been removed from my game and it was like, you can buy this level pack, which I had already completed for, you know, like for $1 or $2 or whatever. I was like, really? And turns out they had submitted an update to Apple. And what they didn't realize was that in doing so, because of their weird like in-app purchase stuff or whatever, it was going to clear out all of your former downloads. And they could fix it, but they had to do that as another Apple update, which took them a week to approve. So there were a bunch of people who downloaded it in the interim, were in the same state where I was. And so as long as you didn't delete your app and you got the next update, all of your stuff was back. So like I had all the old stuff that I had had before and I didn't have to pay for it, which was made me very happy.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. And so I have gone, so like, so I, instead of putting it away and never looking at it again, because I, you know, I was filled with disgust, I instead spent a lot of time playing Tiny Heroes.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you, Guy from Synchrotronics, who emailed us.
There were several, I got several, several different people contacted me, actually, because they had heard, they either heard the show or had heard of the show from people that had listened to it or whatever. So, and they were like, we totally wouldn't do that. We're not jerks. It's all Apple's fault. Blame them. They're jerks.
It's like a evil patch week. There was that whole story about like where Tim Schafer was talking to somebody and
they offered Tim Schafer $1 million.
Yeah. No, and it came out that Microsoft charges $40,000 to deploy a patch to an Xbox Live game, and that, and like
XBLA.
I don't know. That I do not know.
But I think an
on game to deploy a patch to an on disc game, they charge $40,000, which some people are saying, they're framing that as a fine so that you get the game right in the first place. Other people are pointing out, like, well, you know, they're sending a 100 megabyte file to hundreds of thousands of dudes, and that costs a bunch of money. You know, maybe not $40,000. I don't know. But wow. It kind of explains why, you know, you don't get a lot of casual patches to games that maybe don't have an extra $40,000.
That's amazing. I had no idea it was that expensive.
And, you know, this is the problem with these publishing frameworks, right? Is that there's got to be somebody making rules, and the person making rules is, you know, going to make rules. That's what they do.
Yeah.
So, like, Apple's got their approval process, which, you know, I, for one, am under the impression that Apple's approval process results in a lot less bullshit in the App Store. I think if you compare it to, like, the Android marketplace,
comparatively, yes,
there's a lot less evil to be found. But then somebody points out, you know, the four dumb things that they're aware of that slip through the process.
Oh, there are tons of stupid apps.
Because those anecdotes prove somehow that...
I mean, the patent office is... They're probably trying hard to do their best, but they're full of crap, you know? Like, who knows?
You know, publisher framework. What have you been playing, Kevin?
So, Tiny Heroes. I got through 9/10 of the new 10-level pack. Mm-hmm. And it was only $1. It's totally worth playing if you... I guess you guys haven't finished all the other levels or whatever.
No, I kind of wandered away from that game.
It's fun.
I don't know.
You should play it.
You think?
Yeah.
I should pick it back up, play it some more.
I do. I think that you should. And so, because they're like half tower defense, half like logic puzzle. It's just a nice. It's like a nice blend of gaming styles. And then I finally finished the Professor Layton game that I've been working on for a couple weeks. I guess I got it for Christmas, so I had put it down for a while and picked it back up. I guess it was Professor Layton and the Last Spectre.
Yeah.
And so beating the game was good, and like the last few puzzles in the game were
because you're like, oh, finally, it's over.
Kind of, but the last few puzzles had gotten better and better, and then beating the game is sort of the most rewarding part, because then you get access to all these like to probably 20 or 30 additional puzzles that like are just the puzzles. You don't have to go through any narrative stuff to get to them, and the puzzles are pretty good. And that was fun, just having like 30 puzzles after the game, like the narrative of the game was done, to just solve. Because there's all the weekly puzzles that you can download, and then all the like the challenge puzzles.
Oh, I didn't realize they had downloadable puzzles.
Yeah, I think all the games have had weekly puzzles actually. And so
it's like that Picross game on the iPad, where every week you can download a new picture of Mario's face as a Picross.
And so the last few puzzles, the last puzzle in the game, the last official puzzle that like completes you get your little golden Layton by your save game or whatever for beating it, what took me probably 4 hours, because it was not just one like fiendish sliding block puzzle, but two conjoined sliding block puzzles. They had to do one after the other, and they were both incredibly difficult. But I felt really satisfied after I solved them.
4 hours on one puzzle, and yet
two.
You felt satisfied, but also ashamed.
I don't know. No, I felt satisfied.
Okay.
It was hard, and it required a lot of thought and a lot of like experimentation. And
how did your solution compare to the optimal solution?
Oh my god! So the first one there were two sliding block puzzles. The first one, like the optimal solution, was like maybe 50 or 60 moves, and it took me like 700 or 800, and then. Or 900 even. It was under 1,000. And then the second one, the optimal solution. The optimal fucking solution was like 170 moves, I think. And it took me like 3,500 moves. So not very good in comparison.
Do you think... How many points were there, do you think, where those moves resulted in a board...
Identical board layout
that it was identical to a previous
For me?
State. Yeah.
Oh, I probably cycled through the same board layout hundreds of times.
Yeah.
Because I would like try something and I'd be like, oh, this isn't doing anything. And then I'd go back.
Like flicking the blocks around more or less at random just to see if anything new falls out.
And yeah. Just wiggling them back and forth to waste time.
When you move a block to a novel position, you're like, oh, okay, something is new here. And like you feel it, but you'll spend a good 10 minutes. If you're not like thinking about every possible movement, you'll spend a good 10 minutes just sort of cycling stuff around in circles and be like, okay, then back to the same spot. Oh, did it again. Oh, did it again.
Yeah, that's how I solve them.
Yeah. So I contend that those puzzles are more about patience and just like, you know, 80% patience, 10% ingenuity, and 10% sort of determination.
Is that different than patience?
Yes.
I guess tolerance.
Yeah. And then the last game that I played was also a game that I got for Christmas, also on the Nintendo DS, Meteos. It's a really old match three game. Right. It's not Tetris-y because you get single blocks at a time.
I think that I played a bunch of Meteos and I never figured out how the fuck it worked.
So I was trying to play it just with the gamepad controls and was sucking at it. And then I was like, you know...
Yeah.
This is on a touchscreen, and I started playing it with a touchscreen, and suddenly it was a different game. Because like going from like having to move a little cursor that was two blocks to switch.
Can you in a couple of sentences describe how Meteos works? Because to me it was like, all right, so some blocks fall, and then every once in a while a rocket takes off with some of your blocks on it.
So if you match three,
any configuration.
So yeah, if you match three in a column, those three and everything like above them sort of shoots off, takes off like a rocket. And if you match four, it like has more thrust. And if you match five, it has even more thrust. If you match them instead of in a column, in a row, then it tries to launch everything on above those three or four or five together. And it usually can't lift that much weight. But you can either launch some other stuff from below them, or you can launch some of the stuff that's above them. And depending on certain things that I don't quite understand, it will either launch some of the stuff up off the top of it, or it'll launch the whole thing up like as a group. And
so it's possible that no one actually understands how Meteos works.
I'm sure there's some internal logic that the code is following, right? So the designers presumably understand how it works, unless it's some sort of emergent AI. But it's a lot of fun. It was like, once I started using the stylus, I was able to actually beat a bunch of levels in sort of rapid succession. And then I played through the little sort of story arc game and got all the way to the end and beat the final boss or whatever. And while you're playing, you're sort of collecting sort of currency, I guess. Each of the blocks that you match counts for points. And then you can go and buy extra upgrades and new levels and new enemies and stuff. And... So there's a lot of game there that I haven't really explored, but it was pretty satisfying. I remember
really enjoying that, because that was one of the first DS games that was.
Yeah, was it a launch?
It may have been a launch title. So yeah, and that early DS drought, that was one of the few games I had. So I got a lot of play out of that.
Metroid Pinball was pretty good too.
Oh yeah, it was.
I'm not heard.
I'm a sucker for a pinball video game. I really really liked the Nintendo Pinball. Game, it was pretty good.
Pokemon Pinball on the old Game Boy was really good too.
And Revenge of the Gator.
I never played that.
I played a lot of like pinball games on the PC back in the day.
Did you play Pinbot?
I don't remember. I don't think so.
There was that Epic Pinball game. That was pretty good. Did you play a lot of Space Cadet Pinball? It came with Windows for a while. I think it came with like Windows 98.
No, none of the pinball I played came with Windows.
Man, I want that. iPad pinball library thing to come out that's got like Tales of the Arabian Nights and Theater of Magic and all.
Actual pinball games that they've ported to the iPad?
Yeah, they have recreated theoretically all of these, and I imagine it's going to be a thing where it's this app is free, and then each of the pinball games is $100.
Huh.
So, yeah. What about you, Riff?
Not a lot other than pretty much the only thing I've played other than World of Warcraft, because I was out of video game space all weekend, was the little iPad/iPhone app. I don't know if we mentioned it here previously, but those Japanese puzzles called Mazu. There's a app for it that has a bunch of them.
Describe the puzzle.
It is black and white circles, and you're trying to draw a continuous loop through the circles.
Oh, and there's the rule where you can't turn in a black circle, but you have to turn right after it or right before it.
Other way around. That's a white circle, and then a black circle, it has to turn on the circle, and it has to travel two squares in each direction without turning after the circle.
This isn't one of the ones where you connect it with different numbers of lines? Isn't there a Japanese puzzle where you're connecting like circles with two or three lines or something?
You're thinking of, there's like one that's like islands where you're connecting islands with bridges.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a different one. I don't remember what that one's called.
Okay. I remember seeing, there was like a Metafilter post about this kind of game, and it linked to like a Java version of it, and I was unable to solve even the simplest of the games.
The two circle problem.
Yeah.
If you look up Mazu, M-A-S-Y-U, it'll offer three apps, and there's like just one called Mazu, which is the standard difficulty, and then there's Bug Mazu, which is, I guess, geared for kids, and then Monster Mazu, which is the harder difficulty ones.
Okay.
What is it with the Japanese and all these crazy logic puzzles?
I think it's one particular company. It's this Japanese puzzle magazine, either entitled or put out by a company named Nikolai. And they're the originator of most of these. I think they may have even been the people that invented Sudoku.
I mean, what is it with the United States and word finds?
Yeah.
I don't know that it's really like we're culturally defined by word finds. It's just, this is the kind of aspects of that culture that make it out here.
But it just seems weird that like, you know, Sudoku, Nurikabe, like there's like a dozen.
Yeah, there's like all these things that like us and 10 other people have heard of.
But there's like a dozen Japanese logic puzzle styles.
Like 30 American word, but like there's stitch hatch. There's cross puzzle.
So the British have cryptic crosswords, and we have crosswords, right? Like that. Those are
but we have
broad categories of things that I sort of understand.
Cross. Yeah,
moto crossword.
Yeah, we have extreme.
The jumble.
Extreme cross.
Crypto crosswords are just superior to crosswords, by the way.
I agree.
Well, yeah.
They're much more interesting. They're a lot harder to get into as a new puzzler.
Yeah, and they're really, like, where I have solved probably a dozen crosswords in my life, I have not ever finished a cryptic crossword.
Really?
Yeah, because there's
not bad at them.
No.
You have never sat down to do one, right. I think.
Well, it's tricky to get started. Like, not only is it tricky to get started solving cryptic crosswords in the first place, it's like tricky to get started on a given cryptic crossword, right? Like, because you have to figure out, with a regular crossword, there's something easy that then gives you some jumping off point for the intersecting clues, whereas
some of the cryptic crossword clues are not that hard, and you'll stumble on something because you'll be
you'll stumble on something because you're Mr. Smart Man and you're good at things like that.
Sure.
Sorry, not all of us got a perfect score on the SAT.
I like I like the cryptic crosswords because they don't require nearly as much outside knowledge.
Is that true?
As a crossword does. Yeah, because like a crossword will be like,
the thing is,
star of, you know, 1978.
But here's the outside knowledge that they require. All of the horse shit that goes on in cryptic crosswords. Like,
okay, you have to understand the language.
You have to be
with the clue
deeply
words
familiar with the tropes of a cryptic crossword to
but there
even
are like
begin.
Two dozen different things at most that they do, and most of them are like within a subset of like 10 sort of standard ones or whatever, and those are not so hard to grasp.
Sure.
So you can learn how to solve cryptic crossword in like an hour.
Yeah. Whereas I mean, the stuff you need to know can be fit on a single sheet of paper. It's just that you have to find that sheet of paper somewhere. You have to actually go get a book of cryptic crosswords that will tell
you. It has a tutorial in the beginning of it or something.
I really like in crosswords when they have, you know, I like solving the long clues, basically, in crosswords, because they're like some sort of pun on something else or whatever. Like, there's like a puzzle hidden in the long clues usually, and that to me is enjoyable, but the rest of the crossword I feel like is just sort of trying to figure out a bunch of obscure facts.
And I don't think you're supposed to be figuring them out. I think that as a well-rounded person, you're supposed to just know all that
stuff. I'm not well-rounded, I guess.
Yeah, but you're one of those people that when you play Trivial Pursuit, you spend the last 4 hours of the game trying and failing to answer a single sports question.
That may be true.
Where I just would answer Nolan Ryan to every single sports question until finally it got to be my turn and I was on the center waiting for a sports piece and the guy picked up the card and was like, fuck. And put the piece in my pie. And I went,
it's just a matter of time.
Sometimes you only need to know one sports, man. How's your World of Warcraft going?
It's all right. I got level 58 and have moved through the portal into Outland and immediately become saddened by the quality of the questing compared to the old world in Cataclysm.
Wow, that's amazing.
There's plenty of poop, though.
I haven't encountered the poop yet.
Where do you first find the poop? Where was the poop? It was in
going to
Zangar Marsh.
No, there's some Terror before Marsh. That.
Some in
there's
Nagrand.
Some in that first in that okay, very first
yeah,
zone.
Some poop in the Grand.
Yeah. It's on the far
there's
western.
There's one where you have to fish that thing out of Nezingwary's ass.
in the northwestern corner of that first zone that you come into, there's some scatological questing. Yeah.
In Hellfire Peninsula.
Yeah.
Wow. Huh.
There's that thing where you have to fly on a raptor and drop poop bombs. On some poop demons.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I encountered any poop quests in Cataclysm.
Are you playing Alliance or Horde?
Alliance.
You might not encounter it because it's right by the Horde base, actually. So that might be, it might be Horde only, or it might be less likely to be done.
How much
by.
Of the stuff in, man, what is wrong with my frog? Oh, sorry. There's a frog in my throat that does not look at
anything
all
like a frog.
How much of Outland stuff is actually split between factions?
Not a lot, but there's quests that are super close to the opposing faction base, so it just becomes harder to do, especially if you're on a PvP server.
Yeah. We had a different experience leveling on a PvP server.
Yeah.
It's always dudes.
Gank-tastic
dudes
mans.
Fucking with you, and then you had to call your buddies who had the level cap to come in and build campfires on their corpses.
Yeah. Well, I mean, back when you had to get to the then level cap of, I think, 70 to be able to fly in anywhere, and you...
Oh, yeah, man. You just, like, somebody would drop out of the sky and murder
you. Yeah. Because you were both, like, you know, 8 levels below them, and they could, like, sneak up on you without you having any idea that they were there.
I saw a YouTube video once of somebody who had it down to where they could fly up to somebody in midair, someone who was also on a flying mount, dismount, kill them, and remount before they hit the ground.
Wow.
I think it was based, they had to use one of their cooldown trinkets to do it, so they couldn't do it like often in a row. They had to wait an hour or whatever between them, but
you jump, you get a bunch of people jumping off of a huge thing that lands in water so that you don't die, and at the last minute you cast water walking on one of your buddies so that he dies and he hits the ground.
I would regularly, if someone thought that they were safe by just parking themselves on their flying mount out of range of the ground, as a shadow priest I would fly up above them, drop, do feather fall, and then as soon as I got in range I would just load them up with dots. And then I would, you know, I'd hit the ground, and usually I was able to kill them in one or two passes. But then their corpse was in the air because it did not fall. So then when they walked back to their corpse, they could not res without the 10% damage bonus.
Oh, they had to walk to where their corpse is, realize it's up in the air, and then walk back to the graveyard.
Yes.
Dick.
Yeah, I was not a friendly PvP player in that regard.
So how are you, how did you find the journey from wherever you got to last time to 58? From 55 to 58.
It was pretty quick, actually. I didn't even...
Because you were at rest experience the whole time. And...
Yeah, I had a lot of rest. Let's see. I don't remember exactly where I left off when I was at 52 last week.
You said you had done the Plaguelands, or you were just started
I'd done Plaguelands, so yeah, I finished Western Plaguelands and then did... Blasted Lands, and that is what took me to 58, huh. I think.
Is Blasted Lands level near level 58 now?
Yeah, where the
they've reordered all of the leveling of all of this.
Oh, maybe it always was. I mean, I might be thinking of something else.
Each of the continents is now divided into two distinct leveling tracks.
Okay.
And all
so
of the
four
and all
tracks.
Of the all of the leveled zones are adjacent to.
So you just go from one to the next.
Yeah, you just go from
like
one
in
next.
A spiral.
Or something, yeah.
Interesting.
I switched around a little bit because I started out on the elf leveling path because that's where you get funneled to as a worgen. You end up in not Teldrassil. Yeah, Teldrassil.
Oh, and I didn't really understand. That's why they changed Plague Bloom to Sorrow Moss.
Why?
Is because it was a dramatically different. The level range at which they needed Plague Bloom was no longer the level range of the Plague Lands.
Oh.
So all of those recipes, they needed a thing that made sense to be in
that
the zone
sense.
That you were
yeah.
when you were that level, because yeah. the Plague Lands was no longer at the old world level cap. But apparently Swamp of Sorrows is. It's like that
it,
was one of the last.
That was like yeah.
That's
that
one
was
of
the
last
next
places,
thing I did before. Yeah.
Because
yeah. Plaguelands used to be at the 50 to 60 range, and Swamp of Sorrows was like in the 30s.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they must have switched those, I guess. Yeah. That's man. I
mean, a lot of the.
I feel
a
like
lot
if I went
their,
back to this, it would be just a totally different game.
No, you know, it's
there's some. You see some interest. Like there's a large section in Blasted Lands. There's like the section on the right hand coast that has been covered up because the tide has risen, and then on the left hand side of Blasted Lands, it's all like green, but it's like evil gray swamp green because the I guess whatever the Cenarian Circle is trying to do to recover it is failing, and it's interesting.
Thousand Needles is entirely underwater.
Wow.
That's
crazy.
What's that? The Shimmering Flats is a big lake now.
Wow.
The dam in Loch Madon has been destroyed, so the lake is all dried up.
Wow.
Yeah. There's Ashenvale, there's like this big cyclone with trees constantly whirling around it, like it's waterspout kind of thing.
Wow. I saw some big crazy purple tower on the edge of Loch Madon, but I couldn't get to it. But I took a picture of my character looking at it going, what the hell is that? That wasn't here last time I was here.
World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a video game.
How about you and your World of Torcraft?
Yeah, I hit the level cap. I pretty much just
did you hit it with a lightsaber?
The Old Republic all weekend. That's kind of all I did this weekend was play the Old Republic. And I hit the level cap early Sunday morning. Sunday during the day at some point. I don't know. I wouldn't say I got up early Sunday morning. And then joined a guild and started raiding. not actually that so much, but started doing it's weird. You get some additional quests when you hit the level cap that are these chains with really interesting storylines, actually. Like more like in describing this stuff to you and seeing you get excited about the stories, I was like, yeah, you know, that is pretty cool, actually. There's some cool ideas in the stuff that you're exploring there. It's like daily quests. You start right away getting a bunch of little minor equipment upgrades, which is pretty cool.
Okay.
I tried to run a hard mode dungeon with these guys in my guild, and we just couldn't beat this second boss because
your DPS was inexcusable.
My DPS was inexcusable in this dungeon, yeah. We kept getting hit by the enrage timer. We didn't do enough damage to the guy in little enough time, and so he just suddenly fucking one-hits everybody in sequence.
Not knowing there was an enrage timer, I think would make a bunch of really frustrating experiences, right?
Yeah, not understanding that that's what was happening. That is a very crude method for enforcing the difficulty of a fight. Because, I mean, it's basically saying, like, okay, you have to be, like, this fight can only be won by skilled players with this level of gear, or,
DPS.
You know, like, shitty players with way better gear than this. But it feels kind of clumsy. Like, it feels like the kind of thing that, like, oh, this was clever 5 years ago, but you should have figured out a more elegant way to do this.
I mean, I feel like when I was raiding in World of Warcraft, there was always a balance between getting enough DPS and not overwhelming the threat generation capabilities of the tank. And also, like, conserving resources because I was a mana user or whatever, you know, like.
That was a problem. With this fight, there is a phase that the boss goes into where he can just one-hit everyone except the tank. And so it is critical that nobody over DPSs for even a second during this phase. But then by holding back there, you're just killing time. You know, you're wasting time before the enrage timer goes off.
So, like, having a tool that told you how close you were to the tank's threat level would be really valuable.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to Guild Wars 2, if for no other reason than I want to see if they can make a fun MMO that gets rid of that whole tank healer DPS system. It, you know, thinking about it, there's no reason that a game like this has to have that hierarchy.
Yeah, I mean, right? It just sort of grew out of, because that's what Tiny Muck or whatever the old school MUDs used.
The notion that if like 10 people swarmed a guy that he would attack them equally could be something you could work on, right? But then, like, you know, you have ranged DPS because you want to have some people that are farther away. Can they still hit those guys?
I mean, you're torn, right? Because you want, in this game, it's like, well, this is a two-person... This is a boss that's supposed to be hard enough that two people can beat him. So does it have to be beatable by any two people?
Right.
And if so, everybody needs to be so homogenized that you can't actually make the fight interesting, right? Like, and even in like World of Warcraft, they got away from these encounters that were designed such that, like, you had to have a priest because there was, like, at this critical point during this encounter, you have to mind control one of this guy's minions,
yeah.
And the only way to kill him is to have a priest mind control his minion and use the sweet flaming sword on him instead of on the party. But then they were like, well, what about guilds that don't have a priest and want a druid to heal? I guess we need to start designing these encounters so that everybody can participate. And it's like, in making it more accessible, they have to make it less interesting from an objective sort of outside standpoint.
Well, not necessarily, because Nax, there was a boss fight that was just like that. There was a boss with two minions, and you had to have guys mind controlling the minions. But the solution they came up with for that was that they put they put two crystals there, and anybody can activate the crystal to mind control one of the minions. If I remember correctly.
Well, right. I mean, so the encounter is just as cool, but that sort of makes the priest less special, right? I mean, for a long time, like, there was the way that the progression was gated in vanilla WoW and the rating was that, like, you had to beat some
hunters.
Encounter to get tranquilizing shot.
Yeah.
You had to have a hunter that would beat some encounter, learn tranquilizing shot, which was necessary to beat the next encounter.
It was slightly trickier than that. It was, you could run Molten Core once per week for your guild or whatever. Mm-hmm. One tome of Tranquilizing Shot would drop from the first boss, and you needed three hunters with it to beat the second boss. So they gated it so that you had to spend at least 3 weeks there before you could reasonably kill the second boss, because I think it was like a 2-minute cooldown, and you had to shoot him every 30 seconds or 45 seconds or something like that. And so, yeah, like, it was a very ham-fisted way of gating content, but at the same time, it was kind of cool. Like, yeah. As a player, I can imagine that slow level of progression would be really frustrating, but as a designer, I would be like, oh, yeah, this is going to be great, because they're going to have to keep coming back. They'll, like, get better at the first fight, and then it won't take any time at all.
Yeah, I mean, this should be something that should be a meaningful accomplishment in the end, you know? There was some tricky stuff that we were in some of the group quests in the daily stuff at the level cap in the Old Republic. There were some fights where we had to, like, all right, so let's coordinate. Like, we need to interrupt this guy's abilities, but the abilities are happening faster than any of our interrupt cooldowns, so we had to, like, work out a rotation between us. So it was like, you interrupt this one, and then I'll interrupt the next one, and then this guy interrupts the third one, and then having to
cycle through, kind of pay
attention and stay on point. And that was really satisfying, but, you know, there's a lot of people who just aren't going to be able to beat that encounter without really over-leveling it, because they're just not capable of that kind of coordination. And it's like,
if you don't make those things mandatory, though, like...
Sure, which, nothing is mandatory.
Well, then, like, why not have stuff that's, like, at different difficulty levels? I think that's really exciting.
Yeah.
Because it's something to aspire to if you're not very good.
It's exciting, but who knows how good it is for retention, right? I mean, I'm still pissed off that there's so much stuff that I just can't do if there doesn't happen to be a group of people around for me to play it with, you know?
So they could not have designed any content like that, and you could already be done with the game.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Which, would that also piss you off?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, they're on the planets where there are a bunch of people at the level cap hanging out. I think it is easier to find a group. Somebody's like, oh, this is close, I'll go run you through this.
Right.
You know, which is not fun necessarily, getting somebody who's at the level cap to help run you through like a level 30 multi-person quest. I mean, it's fun in the like, I'm just going to run along behind this guy collecting experience and then get a sweet reward at the end. You know, like, I had fun being run through the first couple of dungeons I ever went through with my level cap friends in World of Warcraft, but like,
I enjoyed running through like Ragefire Chasm with my mage and just gathering, aggroing
the entire instance
and then killing them all at the same time. Yeah, there's something to be said for having enemies that don't scale with you so that you can just destroy them utterly when you get super powerful.
I've only done one PvP war zone at the level cap and we won, so that was a positive experience.
Cool.
Maybe alongside things like dungeon finders, they need some kind of tool that will help match you with an appropriate guild for your playstyle.
Yeah, the problem... Why don't those tools ever work? Like, looking for group tools have been just, like, notorious wastes of time in an MMO. People just don't use the tools. World of Warcraft had a looking for group channel. Everyone just used trade to look for group. And I don't know if it was because the looking for group channel was local and there was a global trade that went across all the capital cities. So if you wanted to get a group, you learned that the effective way to do it was to go to a capital city and use the global chat channel.
But they added, like, actual looking for group type...
Well, yeah, they added a thing that would actually make the group for you. Yeah, you would just say, I want to be in a group, and this is the kind of character that I am, and then it would just put you in that group and then teleport you to where the group goal was.
Right.
Which, that works. You know, Rift was pretty good when there were people playing it. Like, they're just ad hoc.
Has Rift declined in popularity?
No, they're doing fine, I think, but... My experience of playing Rift is that there were a ton of people around, and it was really fun because of the interaction between those people in the lower level zones. But then once I leveled, like, maybe two-thirds of the way to level cap, I was just playing by myself.
So this is something that you've been talking about a lot, I think, with MMOs, is that a lot of people in the low level zones and a lot of people at the level cap, but then there's, like, you know, some quarter or third or half of the game where you're more or less on your own in the sort of like middle to high end,
which seems
areas.
Weird. It seems weird to try to justify that from a, just an arithmetic perspective, right? Like,
yeah.
How does that happen?
I mean, if there's trial accounts, I can see there being more like low level people or something, or maybe it's more fun to make an alt and play them for the first 10 levels, so you just do that 10 times.
I mean, it certainly makes sense that
the collecting zones
at the top,
or whatever.
Right. I mean, that this supports my theory that a lot of the people that play MMOs, the way that they play them is to just keep making characters and stop leveling them once it gets boring, which is, you know.
Does it get boring when you stop getting cool new abilities all the time?
And seeing new stuff. I mean, when you the first time you get to a quest hub that's just like, all right, there is literally nothing new about any of this. Huh. These are the same
kill
tasks
rats.
With slightly different wallpaper.
Deliver five
but
pies.
It's not even like there aren't even any new enemy models in this zone.
Sure.
You know, like it's just once you start seeing.
It's tauntauns all the way down.
Yeah, I mean, once you just see through to the like, oh, okay, right, this is a video game. Like they had to make these. I don't know. You know, the giant bomb guys were talking about getting pissed off that all the buildings were the same. Like, they'll go into a building and there would be like, oh, this is exactly like that other building, except there's no door here, but the wall texture is still like obviously leaving space for there to be a door here. Like they've just recycled mm-hmm. all of this stuff, and like that kind of stuff doesn't bother me so much. But like the. Yeah, I don't know. I did definitely get bored and start a new character at one point in the 40s, in like the very near
1940s.
Yeah, in the 1940s. But then I eventually came back to it. I mean, also, I'm unwilling to play any MMO that has a rest experience feature. I am unwilling to play outside of rest.
World War II craft?
Yes. So I eventually, you know. And I just have to log off for like a week so that I can come back and play for a weekend and not be only earning half of the experience that I so richly deserve.
Right.
Even in a game like World of Warcraft where the leveling is so fast that you're going to plow through it even without rest XP?
Oh, I don't know.
Like, I think I would actually actively avoid rest experience in those cases specifically because I would want to linger.
Yeah. I have not been avoiding it, but I have definitely been.
Never kill anything.
Yeah.
If you didn't have to. You could probably get to the level cap without killing anything really easily now. It was super hard when that one gnome guy did it and wrote the blog about it.
Yeah. Now all he has to do is pick herbs. Yeah.
How did he do it without killing anything
back
in the day?
I don't remember.
did he do?
Somebody made
was
it,
he like a warlock and he allowed his pet to kill stuff for him?
I don't
him
think
or
so.
Like
I think I don't remember what the story was, but the guy made it from zero to the level cap without killing anything.
Hmm. That's
there are quests
impressive.
You can do where you just deliver stuff.
There's yeah, but not enough to that, level. Enough, no. Well, maybe I guess if there's one repeatable one that gives you experience each time, mm-hmm. then that would be enough. But
limited amount of exploration XP.
Oh yeah, right. You get all the exploration stuff. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. I don't know. What's new, Kevin?
Well, there was a Blizzard like conference call with investors or whatever that was pretty interesting. They revealed a bunch of things.
It's weird how much stuff we find out as a result of these
investor
like,
conference
business
calls.
Things that are just fundamentally super boring.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they're clearly not boring enough to not have interesting news bits, right? Like,
they're
about
clearly only saying these things because they have to convince the bigwigs that they're still going to make some money.
I guess.
What are the reveals?
I also heard that they were they responded to people's complaints that the demo was too easy, saying that's just normal mode difficulty, and as you get into harder modes, you are definitely going to die.
I assumed that was going to be true. So Diablo 3 is, they have pushed that back to the second quarter release. You know, originally they had planned to have it out by Christmas, and then it got pushed back.
Yeah, because they made some pretty fundamental changes.
They've made
a
bunch.
They weren't that fundamental.
Well, I mean...
They just didn't make that much difference in how it played.
Yeah,
right?
They sound very big, right?
That sounded really serious, but I don't think it was as big of an overhaul as, mm-hmm. I mean, because they're smart about the way they design their systems, right? I mean, if they, you know, if Blizzard in WoW needed to increase the amount of damage that every sword in the game did by 10%, I imagine that's a single slider somewhere in their settings, right? Like, because all of their stuff is, like, they design it for the ability to tweak it in the future. Like, this is not their first rodeo.
Sure. Or maybe they just have...
Oh, also, they've announced that the theme of Diablo 3 is the rodeo.
They have
first, you have to go to Apple School.
Yes.
And then the second difficulty
Thank you.
Level is to win the rodeo.
Maybe they have a slider, and what it does is activate 10 interns to change the...
Yeah, this is the hire more interns.
Zug, zug.
So something that I thought was pretty interesting was that Diablo 3 is going to have at most 4 players at a time in multiplayer. Which is a significant change from the 8-player, I think, that they had in Diablo 2.
One might say a 50% reduction.
But, I mean, that's, like, surprising to me that they scaled it back that far. And I'm not sure why that is, but...
Difficulty balance issues, maybe?
It could be. Like, maybe they just having 8 players on with all the crazy new, like, spells
higher,
and effects.
Yeah, higher poly count. Yeah.
That it just was too big of a deal.
Too many unicorn rainbows on the screen at once, and they're afraid people's computers will have acute overload.
They
acute overload?
A core dump.
Blizzard announced, they mentioned that Titan is definitely... an MMO of some kind.
I mean, I feel like nobody didn't know that.
I know.
The only people who knew that also doesn't like Sarah Lee.
Yeah. They talked about their Blizzard Dota, which I didn't actually realize this, but it's going to be themed on StarCraft.
Oh.
It's not just StarCraft. It's like, I mean, Thrall is one of the characters, right?
I think it's a StarCraft 2... I think it's effectively a StarCraft 2 mod, almost.
Well, okay. I see using the StarCraft 2 engine, yeah. But it's not themed. It's themed after all of Blizzard.
Okay, sure. But it's using the StarCraft 2 engine. So it's going to be a free-to-play online game. I don't know what that's going to end mean.
All of those? I mean, there aren't any Lola-likes.
Lola-likes?
Yeah, League of Legends. What's the other one? Come on, what's the other MOBA?
I don't know.
Or whatever, what is it that Gabe Newell called it? The massively online, the MOBA, the massively online battle arena. There's League of Legends, and then there's one other one that's really well known.
Oh, I have
the
no
only
idea.
One I know
Dota.
Is Dota.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so it's going to be a free-to-play as opposed to like a sold product or whatever. And I don't know if they're going to have some sort of microtransaction model or something.
They certainly will. Yeah. That's how they all work.
Okay.
Is they have new like hero dudes that you unlock for money.
Okay. Valve is attempting to trademark the term Dota, and Blizzard's like WTF dude. That is totally something that has been part of the like Blizzard and Warcraft 3 community for like 7 years, and you can't do something that's, you can't trademark something that has been in common usage.
Yeah, I mean, it's Defense of the Ancients, and the ancients in question were the ancients from the Night Elf faction in Warcraft 3,
yeah.
Right? Like the
it's a weird case. I'm surprised that Valve tried to trademark it, yeah. And I mean, I guess I'm not surprised, but it, you know, I would be surprised if they thought that they could just do it without any kind of objection. I'm curious how that's going to pan out in the end. So yeah, that was all the Blizzard news. There was sort of some major waves created by Double Fine, which yeah. launched a game on Kickstarter.
Did they break 2 million yet?
They were at 1.8 million when I looked earlier today. Hmm. So they're slowing way down, but they're, you know, they're already four and a half times funded.
400 yeah. grand goal.
Pretty awesome.
I hope that it's good.
Yeah.
You know, so I watched, I hadn't actually realized that they had a video. I just sort of read all the materials. I didn't notice that there was a video thing. And he's like, you know, this game might be awesome or it might suck a lot. But half of this project is to make a documentary about the process of making a video game. And if even if the game sucks, there's going to be this cool documentary about making a terrible game.
Wow, so it's like Lost in La Mancha kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like, huh.
It's like a quarter of the funds. Oh, I mean, I don't know if they're going to divide it this way all the way up, but a quarter of the funds are meant for making a documentary about the making
so
of the game.
Their lead programmer will like break his butt bone from riding a horse maybe during the first week, and then there will be a sandstorm that destroys most of the sets.
Yep. And, yep. And then most of the development team will swallow bugs.
And then one of the guns that is supposed to be loaded with blanks will, for whatever reason, have a real bullet in it. And
yeah, it's gonna be a mess.
Speaking of Kickstarter, this seems like the point in time to pimp a Kickstarter thing that I have donated some money to. I decided as a sort of to inject some philanthropy into my life, I've decided to start budgeting $50 a month to give to interesting Kickstarter projects. And this month, I think 30 of it went to Double Fine, but 20.
Good. They were really desperate. They were really desperate for some money. And so
you pushed them over the top.
Yeah, I wanted to make
that was a real act of philanthropy.
It was when it was first announced, and I wanted to make absolutely sure they ended up with enough money to make a Mac version of the game. But
And then people were already, there was rumblings on Touch Arcade of them, like, they changed the wording of, yeah, we'll definitely do a Mac version to it. We'll definitely see about the possibility of maybe someday making an iOS version. And everybody's like, what?
So the other thing I donated to this month is called Monster Guru. And it appears to be a sort of Pokemon clone, but it's for iOS. But all the backgrounds and illustrations in it are really beautiful hand-drawn art, and it uses the iPhone's GPS feature to control your movement around the map. So in order to move your character around in the game, you have to actually move around in the physical world.
So you actually have to wander around in tall grass.
Yes, to collect your monsters.
Guru mons.
But it looks pretty cool, so anybody that's into that sort of monster fighting game should look it up on Kickstarter, Monster Guru, and see if that's maybe something you'd be interested in. They've got 29 more days to gather $2,700.
That seems doable.
Seems doable.
$100 a day.
Yeah, that's only like $1,000 a day. What else is new?
The second game that was funded by that indie fund that Cube was the first game of, mm-hmm. It came out, and it's called Dear Esther, and it made back all of the money that they borrowed from indie fund in 5.5 hours on Steam.
This is basically a HD remake of what was originally a Half-Life mod,
okay.
I believe.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the game. Yeah. I saw that there were a couple of really pretty screenshots, but
having Steam's support for this just seems like
unfair.
Well, no, I mean, it just seems like it's sort of picking good projects, only releasing them if they're actually good, and releasing them on Steam seems like a good way to ensure that all indie fund games that see the light of day are going to be profitable.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how they're getting such the highlighting process on Steam.
Mm. I want to. There's like three things that I want to link to in the show notes because we do show notes.
Yeah.
No, we got that news post thing on videogameshotdog.com that I only ever post the new episode is up, and I never wrote you guys a tool so that you could post shit. So
cool.
There was an essay by Jeff Vogel, who runs a company called Spiderweb Software, who's been making these little indie RPGs for a long time.
Stuff. I've been a fan of that stuff for a long time.
They're not really my kind of games. I've never had the patience for
It's been a long time since I've had the patience to play through one, but back in the day when there wasn't a lot in the world of Mac gaming, I played a lot of his stuff.
He wrote an essay about just like his sort of like philosophy for like what you should do if you want to be like an indie games guy. And, you know, it's just a lot of like, you know, him learning a lot of the same lessons that we've learned over years of doing this. And I mean, he's been at this for way longer than we have. But he talked about how just having his games become available on Steam just dramatically changed his life. And I assume that means made it so that most of his life was covered in money and prostitutes. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, Steam is just such a juggernaut, you know? Like, and so far, they just seem to be doing things that are good and right. I mean, I'm curious, how fast would this game have made back the investment if it was not available on Steam?
I doubt that it would have at all.
Know, if somebody just had to randomly type Dear Esther into Google.
They sold, like, 14,000 copies in the first 6 hours.
I wonder if
it would
be possible for us to get our next game on Steam.
I don't know that we want to.
I've seen a lot of worse games on
Steam.
Well,
sure. It's not that our game will not be good enough to put on Steam.
There might be
weird. So Notch decided not to make Minecraft available on Steam because of the way that they restrict updates being sent out. Mm. And we'd have to see. I mean, this is very cart before horse anyway. Who knows? I mean, sure. There are games that are way less legit than the thing that we're working on.
We're not going to quit. There.
Yeah. What else?
Jordan Mechner is going to remake Karateka.
Is it Karateka or Karateka?
Yes, it's one of those two. Okay. I never knew. I don't know. I always pronounced it Karateka because it was like Karateka. Mm-hmm. Karateka.
I just always thought it was Karateka and Yai-R Kung Fu.
I cannot remember if I beat the game when I played it as a kid. Because it was one of those things where you kind of had to memorize a bunch of fights in sequence. And I remember getting to the princess. And I remember
but you could not beat up the princess.
Well, she kills you.
Oh, yeah?
I remember getting to her, and I remember dying to her, but I don't remember if I ever got past that.
I think that Jordan Mechner is, you know, he's a cool guy. He makes games a long time ago and doesn't afraid of anything. But, I read that diary thing that he wrote, and it was really fascinating and really good, and I have zero interest in playing any game that guy has ever made or that he makes now.
But what, didn't really? Prince of Persia?
I hated Prince of Persia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was so hard.
I don't, what
you
was...
know, and like I didn't encounter it until way after it was like at all state of the art. I mean, I tried to play it on like, I tried to play like an NES port of it, and I was just like, man, fuck this game. Like,
what was your opinion of the train one we played?
I was very confused all of the time.
You have a really hard time navigating 3D spaces in the real world, let alone
on this. It was not my fault that I had a hard time navigating the 3D spaces where it was like, all right, here's a bunch of shitty dithered wood paneling. And by the way, every wall looks exactly the same as every other wall because it's a fucking train and that's what a train looks like. You know, the thing about a train, though, is that when you're in a real train, you can move your head, you know, like in a continuous motion. It's not like, oh, what I have to do is I'm going to turn my head, but I don't know how far I'm turning it. And it's not always the same amount of turning. And
sometimes I can look up, sometimes I can't.
Yeah, and also, there's this door to the bathroom looks exactly like the door to the hallway. So every once in a while, you accidentally just open a door and get shot because it's like, oh, sorry. I didn't realize the murder door was the same as the toilet
every
door.
Every once in a while, you accidentally pee in the hall.
they decided to leave out that level of realism. No, I mean...
Yeah.
The Last Express was a bad game. The reason that The Last Express did not sell well is that it was a bad game. It was very ambitious and it did a lot of really interesting things if you were willing to tolerate the bad game in which all of these interesting things were being done. Like,
I did not get to play it enough to really form a really definitive opinion about it.
You actually like to think out your opinions ahead of time before you just yell at strangers on the street.
You do so well in San Diego because it's like people are yelling stuff at you. You're yelling stuff right back at them.
Yeah.
And you guys aren't talking
about
the same
thing. Somebody's like, sweet Ghostbuster shirt, bro. And I'm like, The Last Express fucking sucks.
Yep. And then you just walk right on by because you can cross the streets diagonally.
You can. There's all those did you guys explore the diagonal crosswalks of San Diego?
No.
It's the only place I've ever seen them.
That's insane. And then we have, I don't know if you want to go through these item by item, but there was...
Yeah, it's every single one of them.
There was a...
There's some interesting stuff in there.
After Bethesda released Skyrim, they had a week-long sort of game jam thing where all the developers got to just screw around and make... something cool, you know, like, and there were no definitions at all. So, like, some of them made, like, an extra weapon class. So they made, like, a spear, and some of them made, like, changed how the water is modeled, and some people did, like, a bunch of other stuff.
I like the one where, playing on Xbox with Kinect, you have to actually shout the shouts.
Yeah, so you could, like, you could actually yell out the shouts. So, but I thought that was actually kind of neat because then you didn't have to equip a shout. You could just yell whatever just shout you wanted to.
Yeah, and then your skill at the game is determined by how many of the shouts you can remember.
Which is freaking cool if that's if that's a real thing. That's
what you
awesome.
Do is you get one of those like tone dialers from Radio Shack and you just plug.
Oh,
you
I totally record, used to have one
You
of
record
those.
A shout into each of them and then you just hit a button with your nose.
What I Mine was don't recorded understand with the noises is that why that would have to
headphones
have to be,
make when you put a quarter in.
Yeah.
Why would that have to be on Kinect? Why couldn't that just be on any computer with a microphone?
I guess it could
or
be.
Or why couldn't it be on any Xbox, which has had a mic? I mean, in the fucking like Rainbow Six games where you could say, team man, weld the door.
And then he'd throw a hand grenade.
Yeah. It was like, I thought that's what you meant.
Let's see. There were a couple of, you know, neat new spells and stuff like that. There was like a whole adoption process for NPCs, which seemed kind of
like that our friend Werebear is in it.
Yeah, Werebear. There is
can you adopt Ferengar's Secret Fire and cut out his tongue?
You could build your own house, complete with skeleton butter, as Riff misread. Let's see here. There were some spell combinations that like they did, which I didn't quite understand because the examples they had were like if you have flame in one hand and raise zombie in the other one, you would cast Flame Atronach.
But yeah,
flame
why Atronach, didn't you just have Flame Atronach in one hand?
Yeah, so I didn't understand exactly what that was all about.
So explain this one. Verlet surfaces for non-rigid objects like the Fat Giant.
I mean, I think that's probably some technical thing that we don't understand. Yeah. And I think it was a giant with a big bouncy man boobs.
And there was a waving banner in it when they said Verlet surfaces. I don't know what that means.
Huh.
So, yeah, I'm sure that's a technical
term. Maybe they
term.
Meant velvet surfaces.
I don't think so.
You know, there is this whole system in the Old Republic that did not exist in World of Warcraft for, like, your cloak can flap around for real in response to things. But mostly what that does is that when you're riding a speeder and wearing a cloak, half the time your cloak is sticking down through the gas tank of your speeder, and then half the time it's flying up in the air because it's leaping out of the geometry of your speeder because it realizes that it's stuck.
That's weird.
Anyway, go on.
There's a whole set of like lycanthropy things. Like there was a whole lycanthropy perk tree, or you could... do vampire feedings. You could become a flying vampire lord.
Can you not do vampire feedings anyway? Like, what does it mean to be a vampire?
I don't know. I've never gone
What's
down
it like
that
having
route.
A roni? Was there the having a roni mod?
And then the last one was kind of funny because in the list it was a mud crab animation tweaks. And I'm like, why is that interesting or important or whatever? And it's like, I was watching the video and he's like fighting these mud crabs and he killed them. And I was like, I don't notice anything different at all. And then this giant mud crab the size of like a city crawls out of the ocean and starts attacking you with like these, you know, giant like claw pincher things, which are like the size of small towers. And I was like, oh, now I see what that's all about. So yeah, that was more or less the full list. There was a lot of like mounted combat and dragon mounts and stuff. Neat ideas. You know, I don't know if they would actually just put that in as a patch or if that would be part of DLC.
Yeah, I mean,
whatever.
I feel like that's a good way to lay a bunch of groundwork for DLC. I don't know. Yeah. From hearing some interview with one of those guys, it seems like they did not necessarily have a lot of specific DLC planned. They were like, we're just going to finish the game now, right. You know, and then decide what we're going to do.
Which is interesting because I think, I feel like Blizzard plans out their first two levels of DLC.
Do they? Like the first couple content patches?
The first couple major content patches well before the game is released.
I mean, I think the development cycle on those is significantly longer than the release cycle, so you kind of have to do that, right?
Yeah.
And that may not be true with DLC for something like Fallout or Skyrim. Right?
Yeah, the single player games is probably a different animal.
So the pattern with the Fallout games and their DLC, which granted only one of these was actually Bethesda, but I feel like they released like 3 or 4 pieces of DLC over the course of like a year, and then they release a Game of the Year edition that has all of them in it, and that's fine. I don't remember what the Oblivion DLC was like. I was so underwhelmed by Oblivion that I was like, oh, DLC for Oblivion, huh? Like an expansion for Oblivion. Who the fuck cares? I just was playing it wrong. I didn't get what was going on in Oblivion, right? It took playing Fallout 3 for me to understand, like, oh, okay.
I remember our friend Dave telling the story about playing Oblivion and playing for many, many hours, just killing mud crabs and wolves and stuff and wondering when this is going to get more interesting, and then finally slept in a bed and gained 14 levels.
Mm. That was goofy. That whole system was goofy.
You had to sleep.
You
to
had
gain
to
levels?
Sleep to level up. Yeah. Kind of didn't.
Interesting.
I don't know what they were trying to prevent. You know what they were trying to prevent? They were trying to prevent you leveling up while there were any fucking enemies around, because then they'd have to figure out how their scaling algorithms were going to work with that. Mm-hmm. I think I just figured that out.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense.
So that's all the news.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sweet.
Up next is the assignment, Super Mario RPG, Legend of the Seven Stars. Secret of the Seven Stars? Legend of the Seven Stars. Super Mario Brothers 7, Star Search.
When did you hear about the stars for the first time?
On the box.
Yeah, because like I got one of the stars and I was like, what the?
That was the first. Fuck? Oh, this game has stars in it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There was a star in the opening cutscene on a cloud.
Okay.
When that sword that turns out is like a spaceship, I guess, goes into Bowser's castle, there are 7 stars flying around it.
Oh, are there?
Yeah.
I didn't even notice.
Okay, I didn't notice that.
Yep. I mean, when do you find out about the Triforce playing Zelda, right?
That's true.
They talk about it.
In the instruction manual.
They talk a lot about it in the game.
No.
The games.
Yeah, but not until, I mean, in terms of a single
you might find the first piece first before you start talking about it.
Or like in the, was it Link to the Past, you have to go find those 3 sage amulets or whatever it is before you even hear about it.
One of them is sage, one of them is parsley.
The title screen, though, has those 3D, those 7 Triforces.
Has those 3 triangles on it, but you don't necessarily know what that means yet.
Yes, you do, because you played Zelda 1.
Oh, sure. I'm just saying, in a vacuum.
What'd you think?
I like it. I mean, I already knew I like it. What do you guys think? You're the ones that hadn't played it before.
It's all right. It seems like the movement and everything, like Mario's movement is kind of slow. And I agree with you. I really dislike isometric movement with a D-pad, having to push 2 directions on the cross to get him to move.
Yeah, I've been playing it with a gamepad, and it's okay.
Yeah, I'm playing with a gamepad as
well. It's okay, honestly. I kind of hate the graphics. I sort of hate the like latter day Super Nintendo stuff where they were just using a lot of bitmaps of like pre-rendered 3D stuff. Mm. Like the chandeliers that you're fighting on in that opening scene look like shit.
Yeah,
like is this glob of, but like, I only know that this is a chandelier because it's vaguely shaped like a chandelier and has like a candle on it. Mm-hmm. But like, I would rather have like a flat colored surface that actually looks good in pixel art than a shitty, blurry, low res thing that looks kind of like marble. Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like Donkey Kong Country only. Donkey Kong Country was okay because it was moving really fast, right? Like, you'd look at all this stuff, and you weren't, like, staring at a still image of it for a really long time and just seeing how shitty the The characters are cool. The characters look good because I feel like these were drawn. Right. They were drawn pixel by pixel. You know, but like the rendered backgrounds, it's like, ugh. The tech just wasn't there to do that yet. You know, it would have been on the PS1 even. But yeah, that shit is ugly. But man, I like this game. You didn't.
I don't like the combat.
I don't in general like turn-based RPG combat.
I do not. No. Like, this is better than like Final Fantasy combat.
You know, a lot of your job involves designing
sure.
encounters for turn-based RPG combat.
Yeah, that is true.
I mean, a lot of your job involves sleeping with women too, but.
I like that there's at least a little bit of interactivity with it in terms of like the QuickTime event type stuff, but.
I realized bugged me about this when I played it before and bugs me a little bit about it now. There is often not a clear signal on defending whether you've been successful or not.
You can definitely, it's...
I still have no idea how to defend.
You can kind of see, like, based on their movements, because, like, Mallow kind of puts his hands up and Mario pulls his hat down.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But there's no sound for it the way there is when you attack.
And they're like, cool, too. Like, it's like, oh, this added an extra punch to this animation, mm-hmm. or this added, you know, this added an extra
so
effect.
It's so obvious when you have done the doubling up damage thing, but yeah, the defense thing, I still have no idea if I've defended extra or not.
Yeah. And so sometimes they'll do zero damage, and in those cases, I assume that I have defended properly. If they miss, I don't know if it's because I defended or because they were just going to miss. Like, I started flipping through this GameFAQs thing about the combat math, and I was just like, you know, I don't actually care about this. The one thing that I never figured out was how to get an extra timing boost from any spell.
Hmm. I got it once on Mallow's hit point rain spell.
I've gotten it several times on his thunderstorm.
Really?
Thing.
I haven't managed to
right before the lightning strikes, you hit and it will sometimes double the damage.
It's weird how it's weird that it just doubles it, right? Like
it's not just doubling it.
No, but I mean it
can be up to double.
It's crazy, right? Like that it makes a gigantic difference in your survivability. Right. I mean, I guess you can just grind levels, but
yeah, like when I was playing fighting a bunch of dudes the Shy Guy boss or whatever, and he has like the four guys that he summons. If I was able to double that Thunderbolt spell, I was able to kill all his underlings in one hit. And if I didn't, then there were still four dudes there. And it was like a major difference whether or not I was able to hit that timing thing, which was cool. I liked that. I was like, okay, this is a neat, like, this really rewards being on the ball.
I do like that it adds an element of player skill compared to avatar skill that is missing in a lot of these games. Right? Yeah. Like you know, it gives you the option to just grind and grind and grind. And, you know, I just kind of like the fights. I like just kind of zoning out and running around and... It doesn't bother me because you can avoid them. I realize that this is...
I never avoided any, though. I just have been killing everything.
I didn't either, but the fact that I could... The thing that always drove me fucking nuts about Final Fantasy games is that when you wanted to go out and get into fights with monsters, you had to run around and wait for it to happen to you. And when you wanted to walk back to town without getting in any fights with monsters, you had exactly the same amount of control over whether you got into fights with monsters or not. And...
Is there any point in saving any of the flower tabs or anything like that?
I hung on to them because I wasn't sure whether I would want to use them on another character.
You have a communal flower resource.
You do?
Yes.
I did not know that. So no.
Yeah.
So why are those even items?
I don't understand. Because it is, you just have number of flowers in your party, and I think any specials that you or your other party members use pull out of the same one.
When you get those hidden chests, they often just increase your max flower points.
Is there more than one? I've only found the one that was pointed out to me.
Yeah, there's another one in that room.
Really?
Yeah, you have to ride around on the guy's head until he's standing in a particular... Like,
oh,
I just,
my God.
Yeah,
oh.
I know. There's a bunch of them like that. You can stand on top of any NPC, and they will walk around with you on their head. No, I know. And they walk around fucking randomly. So even if you know where the thing is, because you're looking at a guy
to
where the
told me that.
Bricks are. There is one that, as far as I can tell, you can only get the first time you go into the palace in Mushroom Town, because that's the only time there's ever an NPC in the right place for you to do it.
I looked it up
and I was like, oh fuck, this has happened before the point where I'm at. And I tried and tried and tried to find where this fucking thing was. And even knowing where it was, I couldn't find it.
I am just not going to worry about any of those, I think.
Yeah, it's not. I don't think that they're that important. Right, because I mean, again, you can either be good at the game to progress, or you can grind through it to progress. And that's fucking great.
Yeah, the multiple paths, I appreciate that element of it, but geez,
I don't know. For whatever reason, I really enjoy the, to a greater extent in Paper Mario than in this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would eventually want us to do Paper Mario as an assignment because it was just like super formative
good
for me. And it's got the same thing, but with really low numbers, which I like, which is like a really tightly and elegantly designed thing. This is way more Final Fantasy style, where it's like, oh, well, you're eventually going to have like 500 hit points, you know? And it's
sure
a little, it's not quite to that extent, but
I've got like 50 hit points now.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It'll turn out that this will be a 3-week assignment because there's actually not going to be an episode of Video Games Hot Dog next week.
I'm glad because I like being able to play for like an hour or two at a time and then put it down for a while and get some work done. Yeah.
I don't know how long this game actually is. I mean, I beat it, and so it can't be that long.
I can't play it for very long at a time because my thumbs get tired, and I don't know if it's just the buttons on my controller are really stiff.
Did you get a new controller that's just like your keyboard and they're really loud and hard to push in?
Do you have strings attached to your thumbs leading to a pulley system in the ceiling that is connected to the refrigerator?
Sausages. I think it's partly because Mario moves a lot slower than I'm used to.
You can make him run.
You can just hold down Y and he'll turbo run.
But that slowness makes me push the buttons harder. Even though it's not an analog gamepad.
I know that feeling. So this is continuing to be the assignment next week and also the week after that, because we're not gonna have a show,
but that's cool. It's a good game.
Yep,
and we should keep playing.
I'm glad to have an excuse to force myself to play it.
Yeah, me too.
Why do you have to force yourself to play it, though?
I mean, I don't really, but I feel like
there's a bunch of people who say this is awesome, and I want to know why.
Yeah.
It's not that I have to force
myself. You would not have gotten around to it without the context in which you're going to experience, like, social scorn if you don't.
Yeah, I would otherwise probably play World of Warcraft or something instead.
Yeah, and then you would face social scorn for that.
Yes.
Right.
All right. Hey, how about some listeners' mail?
Hell yes.
We don't have much in the way of it. There was one thing that got sent to us via the KOL radio show that I apologize. I deleted the message after clicking the link and looking at it, but before reading who it came from. So sorry, that guy. But it was basically a link to a Metafilter thread about this guy on Errant Signal, his blog about games. He made a video critiquing Half-Life. I tried to watch that video, and here is what happened. I clicked it, and it played a Yoplait commercial. And then there was about a minute of a guy with a beard saying, "All right, guys, I'm about to say something that's going to piss you off. Half-Life is overrated." And then there was like a record scratching, and then another Yoplait commercial. So I just closed it.
So you just assumed that this was actually some sort of Yoplait.
Yeah, this is some sort of like Yoplait ARG where we have to start like buying as many things of Yoplait that's how they're releasing Half-Life 3. It's like one bit at a time.
It's the Half-Life code under the fruit under the bottom of the yogurt.
He, I think, is probably going to talk on this thing about what?
I like how you're just assuming his surmisals.
Yeah. No. So I read some of the comments on the thing. It was like, I think that maybe what his criticism is about Half-Life being really like on rails, like, and being a really heavily guided narrative thing. There was also this article by this guy, Tevin Thompson.
Tevis.
I'm thinking of Tevin Campbell.
Yes.
There's his song, I don't know any songs by Tevin Campbell. I never actually listened to any. Usher.
His sister, Nev.
He wrote an essay about Zelda and how, in his opinion, the first Zelda game, the Zelda series peaked at Zelda 1 and has only gotten worse since then.
And
culminating in the worst piece of crap, Skyward Sword.
Right. Basically, his there are several prongs to his extremely long thesis. This article could have been a little punchier, I think. Of course, everything could be a little punchier, you know. He
Mike Tyson's punch out.
Like this episode, for instance, was probably way too long.
That's true.
But you listen to it at quadruple speed, and it's like
just goes by in a flash.
Reasonable podcast. He talks about how the thing that made Zelda good. So, like, the thing that made Mario good was, like, jumping on stuff, and that is a thing that the Mario series is just totally stuck to, and every, like, modern Mario games are just improvements, and they successfully transitioned into 3D.
You can
3D.
Sometimes jump on two things.
Yeah, you jump twice. You can jump higher.
You stack a bunch of stuff on top of each other, and then jump on them all in a row.
Zelda was a game about exploring this big world, and then the later games became about finding a bunch of keys to a bunch of locks that the designer was presenting to you in a very specific order. And he points to...
Yeah, he reclassifies the puzzle dungeons and like the things as actually just sort of locks that which, need keys.
Which they are, right? This point, I think, bears some consideration. Starting with A Link to the Past, the bombable walls just had cracks on them to show that you could bomb them, as opposed to being like things that you discovered by fucking wasting a bunch of bombs.
You still
right?
this is had where... to notice that they were there.
Well, okay. But I mean, a thing where in Zelda, bombing a wall was a way of discovering a shortcut or discovering a little bonus thing, or maybe a bad, you know, maybe a pay me for the door repair charge, right? Like, but in A Link to the Past, bombs were just another, like, that became a door, and the bomb became the key to the door, and it was just right there in front of you. He complains a lot about, in the 3D Zelda games, about the extent to which the environment that you can move around in is artificially limited, and which is just all about them telling that story, right? The story of this world in which you are the solution to every problem that the world has, and that you're the only possible solution to all of those problems.
Wasn't there some world limitation in the original Zelda?
There wasn't. You could pretty much go anywhere from the very beginning. It's just that you would get your ass handed to you by the tough monsters if you didn't have a better sword
I
and more hearts.
I could have sworn that there were some rocks in the
there
way
were,
and stuff.
I mean, the power bracelet and all did exist.
There were a couple of, like, sure, there were some dungeons that you couldn't get into, but I'm almost certain that the entire overworld map was available except the handful of single screens that you needed the raft to get to, which all those were was a dungeon or one that was just like a place where you could go get some money making games.
So the things that were blocked by Briar Rocks were in later games.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think that there were any roadblocks.
It's super hard for me to keep the first couple of
Zelda straight in my head very well.
Because Link to the Past was, I think, the game that I spent the most time playing.
I mean, and I, you know, it is the one that I have the fondest memories of.
Me too.
But I mean, you know, this guy talks about, like, he bought A Link to the Past and beat it the same weekend that he bought it, whereas Legend of Zelda was a thing that he never managed to beat the second quest, right? Like, it was a thing where it was for his entire childhood. It was like my space quest, right? Like, which I just never beat until I was an adult and went back and looked at spoilers and then finally saw the ending of the game, right? Huh. Like, and, you know,
I mean, it seems like this is, as well as being nostalgia for this game, though, isn't this also nostalgia for when you were a kid and had the time to be frustrated on a game like
this?
Well,
I don't think it's so much. I mean, I think he thinks that, he's not saying that the newer ones are bad games. I think he's disappointed in where that legacy went.
He's disappointed that you're not sort of doing things that are interesting, and instead you're doing just a bunch of tasks.
Yeah. There, and that there's no challenge, right? Like, Zelda was hard. It was hard to fight the dudes. Like, fucking, you'd get into a room full of dark nuts, and you were like,
yeah,
fuck. This, I really have to be on the ball, or waste a bunch of bombs, or I am fucked in this room full of dark nuts, because fuck these fucking dark nuts.
Well, and you said earlier at dinner that at some point he compares it to the new Dark Souls.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was saying that, like, Demon Souls, to him, seems like the natural extension forward, because he thought maybe it was just impossible to have that kind of game in a modern context.
Right.
But then that Demon Souls is, you know, it's controversial and simultaneously lauded and despised.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, it's really a niche sort of game.
Sure, but I mean, so was Zelda at the time, right?
Binding of Isaac is interesting because he's just focusing on the dungeony coolness.
Yeah, it's like homage, yeah. but in a way, Binding of Isaac is also a game that has extremely harsh penalties for dying, which is you can't play anymore, right? Like, you lose all of your progress and you can never get it back, you know?
Yeah, but it's also a game that's designed to be played over and over.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know. I thought that this essay was full of some pretty interesting points. I will try to remember to post a link to it in the news feed for videogameshotdog.com. But yeah, so the guy leveling the same sort of like linear, like Half-Life is just a hallway from set piece to set piece. I would agree with him, you know, that's what it is, but I would have a really hard time describing Half-Life as being overrated in the same way that I have a really hard time describing Ocarina of Time as being overrated, because I remember how just blown the fuck away I was by the experience of playing Half-Life.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it may be on rails, but there's so much interesting stuff to see and do along those rails.
I mean, there is a balance to be struck between crafting every moment of an experience for somebody and then letting the game itself be like... I mean, it's kind of like the game versus simulation thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to end up with some memorable moments in a simulation-y kind of game where some crazy shit happens and it probably only ever happened to you, and that makes it really special to you. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that that's the only good thing that can happen in a video game, right? Like, there's not like a perfect video game, and games that are more like it are better than games that are less like it, right? Like, there's a lot of different ways for a video game to be good.
Here's a question. Did either of you finish 3D.Heroes?
No.
So I feel like it was, not having played it, but having watched a couple of people play it for an hour or so, like, it seemed like it was very much a throwback to the first or second Zelda, and looked awesome to me because I remember loving those games.
He specifically talks about that in that.
Okay. I haven't gotten to that point
yet. And how it was like, oh, this is more like it, but then how it just was sort of boring. Like, it just didn't. Okay.
Because it looked awesome to me. Like, I was super, super excited by watching people play it.
I was super excited about it, too. And I bought it and I played it. I played it for about an hour. And then I was just like, I don't want to play this anymore.
Huh. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
I mean, part of why it lost me was, and this is 3D dot game heroes. Is that? Yeah. I don't even remember. It was just a Zelda clone, right? Like, it didn't add anything to the mix.
That's not entirely true.
I could see. But I mean, it was like, all right, I got the boomerang. What does the boomerang do? I already know what the boomerang does, right? Like, it wasn't like, I got this new power-up. What does it do? No, I got this new power-up that's just another one of the power-ups from Zelda 1, and I know exactly what it does. I saw that dock earlier, so I know I'm going to get this raft, and I know this raft is going to let me travel in one direction without control off of this dock, right? Like, maybe they mix it up later, but they didn't mix it up early enough to... Like, I would just rather go back and play Zelda than play a clone of Zelda with better graphics. Yeah, I don't know.
Right.
Half-Life was fucking great to me. I really enjoyed it. And I understand that, like, maybe the best feelings that I have about Half-Life pale in comparison to the best feelings that a dude who's really, really into Dwarf Fortress has about Dwarf Fortress. And that certainly means that Dwarf Fortress is better at being a certain kind of thing than Half-Life is, but I don't think it's fair to say that one of those games is better than the other.
No,
right?
I agree.
I don't think that you can say, I don't think that like the frat boy who plays Half-Life and then looks at Dwarf Fortress and says, what the fuck is this nerd bullshit, is right when he says Half-Life is obviously a better game than Dwarf Fortress, but I also don't think the the ludology theorist who is writing his blog about what is game, you know, like can say that Dwarf Fortress is a better game than Half-Life, right? Because of the possibility of emergent gameplay and because of, of whatever it is, right? Because it's not an on-rails experience, like because they've created this world that you just get to play in, and, you know, the world is a character. And so is this butterfly corpse or whatever. I mean, those are cool stories. Those are cool stories.
Yeah, yeah.
But somebody had to play that fucking game for like 300 hours and figure out how all that bullshit worked in order to produce that story.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like for every one of those stories, there's the story of the guy that accidentally hits the wrong button and some lava pours in and totally destroys all of his shit. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, I guess that's over. Although, that said, the new version of Dwarf Fortress came out recently, I guess.
It's got that adventurer mode. I haven't actually played Dwarf Fortress in a long time, but I keep his updates in my RSS feed, so every now and then I get to read something interesting about how hands can be now cut off of guys and then animated with necromantic magic to attack that guy.
The thing that I'm interested in about it is that there's apparently the mode where you can just play it as a single player roguelike, mm-hmm. where you're just
you're one of the dwarves.
That's been in for a long time, but it's gotten a lot.
Well, like it actually populates the world with civilizations that you then go around and visit.
Wow.
Which is potentially.
If you can figure out how to play it, it sounds fascinating.
But it seems to me that the adventurer mode might be a little bit of a tutorial, right? Because like you're playing this and you're like, oh, what does this character represent? And then you figure it out, right?
I'm sure there are all tutorials and YouTube videos about how to play it that are findable as well.
Yeah. God, I wish that there was something in between that and...
I feel like... Zach and I do not have the same patience to watch a Let's Play that you do, which is interesting.
Might be true.
And I don't know if that's true. Like, I've just never really sat down to try it.
So, I mean, I sat down and watched a bunch of YouTube tutorial videos to make the theme music to Video Games Hot Dog. Like, I watched some videos of people using Famitracker and showing how, like, oh, this is how chiptunes is made.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was like a thing where, like, all right, that seems
you were
like,
learning a skill.
Yeah,
though.
That seems like
that was like going to
something
a music
like a
lesson.
Genuine edification. And it isn't any more important than knowing how to play Dwarf Fortress, but it feels more important than knowing how to play Dwarf Fortress, you know? And also, I watched an hour of Famitracker tutorials, and I think I would have to watch 100 hours of Dwarf Fortress in order to sanely play 1 hour of Dwarf Fortress. Dwarf Fortress. If somebody wanted to dwarf our fortress, how would they do that, Kevin?
Well,
I'll slap you.
They could tweet us at VGHotDog. They could email us, VGHotDog@gmail.com. They could check out our forums, probably most easily accessible by way of our website, VideoGamesHotDog.com. And then all of our astute and awesome listeners should check us out on iTunes and give us some ratings and reviews.
Give us some reviews. That's how... That I've heard that is the biggest thing in how Apple ranks dudes is by their reviews.
Yeah, number of reviews. Not even. If you think we deserve 1 star, just do it.
Yeah, do it. If you're listening and you're like, fuck these guys, fuck these guys and all of their.
Do
opinions.
These people keep showing up in my feed?
There is an obvious winner between Dwarf Fortress and Half-Life 1. I don't know which one it is. I'm just sure that there is one, and so I fundamentally disagree with these clowns who say that there's not.
Yeah.
1 star.
And as we mentioned a couple times, there's going to be no show next week, but we'll resume a regularly scheduled program in 2 weeks hence.
Keep getting 30 hit points from those mushrooms, buddies. Yeah. Good night, everybody.
Later.